Welcome to the Smart Family Podcast, where we want to help you love being home. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rob Meter and Tony Newhoff.
Hi there, and welcome to the Smart Family Podcast. I'm so thrilled you've joined us today. We have a great episode for you. But before we get to that, we would love to hear from you, our listeners. We're sending out a survey, and it'll be on Instagram or Facebook, Smart Family Podcast. We're just looking for your votes, your input on what episodes were most relevant to you, and also the ones that you would love to hear in the future. If there's anything that you're struggling with in your parenting or in your marriage, and we haven't covered it yet, we would really love to know, because this is why we exist. We exist to help bring you solutions so you love being home. So if you would please do us that honor of looking for our survey, filling it out. It'll be brief, I promise. It'll take you 5 minutes or less. That would just be one way that we can serve you better. Mm-hmm. Today, Rob, we have a very interesting conversation, and it's with Alfie Cohn, who is somebody that you came across in your pediatrics practice. I'd just love to hear how he came onto your radar screen and what captured your attention.
Yeah, I mean, just in doing a lot of research on parenting and stemming a lot from work done by others like Ross Green, I came across Alfie Cohn's work and I found it really compelling. And he makes a great argument for how do we really want our children to develop and how do we actually get there? Is it by the classic notion of, you know, punishing bad behavior and rewarding good behavior, which is sort of like positive and negative reinforcement, which was actually a pretty dominant theory of how to, you know, promote good behavior in kids for decades, if not centuries, in our culture here.
And still is,
yeah, for sure. And many of us grew up in that concept of what he calls conditional parenting. And I think Alfie really challenges that concept and has written about it extensively. He's lectured about it extensively. He's written numerous books on this topic and is very well known for that viewpoint, that what kids really need to develop in a healthy way is unconditional parenting. In other words, you know, there's no positive or negative reinforcement needed to promote healthy development. And notice that I didn't say there to promote good behavior, because he would argue that that's not the end goal anyways. The end goal is to really develop in a healthy way so that your kids can grow up who they want to be and should be. And that idea of, you know, the future and keeping the future goal in mind is, I think, overarching for him.
Yes, and developing into caring and
thoughtful,
empathetic
and
people.
Empathetic, exactly.
Curious. It's one of those ideas that has to sit. Like, I had to sit with this idea when I was reading his book and hearing him speak. I really had to consider what he was saying. And it is part of our passion for this podcast to bring people the thoughts and research of thought leaders. Mm-hmm. And I would say Alfie Cohn is in that category. So I really want any of our listeners who question these ideas and think, wow, I don't even know how this would work, to sit with it and really hear and delve into what Alfie Cohn has to say, because I think it's valuable. And maybe Rob, maybe it's not an all or nothing proposition, you know, that it isn't you go completely in one direction as a parent. Maybe sometimes we need a toolkit and we need a whole array of responses as parents. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think so. But I do think the overarching principles, such as, you know, kids will do well if they can, and, you know, that kids in general want to do the right thing, is something that is maybe foreign to some families. And I think we want that. I would love for parents to maybe reconsider that. Just because we grew up in a certain way doesn't mean it's right. Mm-hmm. And it's always good to challenge a little bit, you know, what we believe and what we think to be right and think, hey, is there maybe a better or different way of doing this? And I think, you know, for nobody, you know, you don't shift your parenting overnight. I think we can maybe all make some improvements and some gradual shifts into the direction that Alfie Cohn is suggesting, which I think would be good for our kids and for our families, because ultimately we want the family to be healthy as a whole and in a holistic way. Absolutely. And so I'm excited to have Alfie Cohn on the podcast today. As I mentioned, he's the author of 9 previous books, including the well-known books Punished by Rewards, Unconditional Parenting, and The Schools Our Children Deserve. He has helped to really shape the thinking of parents and educators across the country and abroad, and lectures widely, and lives in the Boston area from where he joins us today. So yeah, have a good listen to this conversation. I'm sure you'll enjoy it as much as Tony and I both have. Mr. Cohn, thank you so much for joining us on our podcast today.
My pleasure.
So you write and speak extensively on the topic of parenting, and in particular, the idea of rewarding good behavior and punishing bad behavior, for example, conditional parenting versus unconditional parenting. Just tell us, why is teaching parents and teachers about this topic so important to you?
Because of what kids need to flourish. Kids don't just need to be loved by us or even loved a lot. They need to be loved unconditionally, which means with no strings attached. For who they are, not for what they do. And a growing pile of research evidence has demonstrated the harmful effects of putting conditions on our acceptance of kids, the attention and acknowledgement that we offer them, if they feel they have to jump through hoops in order to be cared about by us. That causes all sorts of problems in the way they view themselves, in their psychological development, in how they act. And unconditional acceptance isn't the same thing as saying that anything goes. It's not tantamount to permissiveness.
Right.
But it means that we have to work with them to solve problems that come up, rather than doing things to them, like punishments and rewards, to try to make them act the way we want.
Right. So I would imagine that you probably don't get as much pushback on the concept that punishing a child for bad behavior can produce some unwanted results. But I would imagine that people push back more when you talk about not rewarding a child for good behavior. You know, saying, you know, things like praise and so on. Can you just give us your underlying reasoning for really wanting to get away from both of those, rewards and punishments?
Right. Well, punishments and rewards are not really so different. They're both ways of doing things to kids, to get compliance rather than working with kids to help them grow into good people. First of all, there is plenty of pushback once you make it clear that using euphemisms like consequences doesn't really change anything. That's still a punishment. Or using euphemisms for particular kinds of punishments like forcible isolation, we refer to as time out, as if that makes it any better. You know, so it's basically still a punishment, which is saying to kids, do this or here's what I'm going to do to you. It's about deliberately making kids unhappy when they fail to please us. And that can buy one thing on some occasions, which is temporary compliance at an enormous cost. It doesn't matter what words you use to be able to feel better about making kids feel bad. It doesn't matter how you time it, schedule it, what you cloak it in. The effect is still to get kids to ask the question, what do they want me to do, and what happens to me if I do it?
Right.
And so all punishment, regardless of how it's implemented and what it's called, is basically gets kids more focused on self-interest, not about the impact of their actions on other people. And punishment, regardless of what you call it, always strains the relationship between the child and the parent, the adult, because now you're not seen as a caring ally. You're seen as a potential enforcer, somebody to be avoided when kids are in trouble. And all punishments basically make kids feel bad about themselves without ever teaching them anything that helps them to grow in a moral sense. You know, if you say to the kids, hey, don't let me catch you doing that again, the kid will think, okay, next time you won't catch me. Punishment teaches self-interest and it teaches power. No punishment for hurting other people ever helped a child to become more caring. Only it taught kids, I have to make sure that I'm not caught when I do it. Now, just about everything that I've just said about punishments applies just as much to the flip side, which is reward. In that case, instead of saying to kids, do this or here's what I'm going to do to you, we say to kids, do this and you'll get that. And the question that this leads kids to ask is, what do they want me to do? And what do I get for doing it? Mm-hmm. Again, the focus is not on the child's needs and purposes and values and goals. The focus is only on behavior, the stuff that you can see and measure on the surface.
Right.
And again, exactly as with punishment, reward does not get kids ever to think in terms of being a better person and trying to have a positive impact on those around her. Rewards get kids to be absolutely focused on self-interest. What do they want me to do and what do I get for doing it? And so it shouldn't be surprising to find that the research finds that rewards are just as counterproductive, not just ineffective, but actively harmful as punishments. For example, several studies have found that children who are frequently rewarded or praised, because praise is just a verbal doggy biscuit for pleasing the adult, good job, rewards and praise lead children to become less caring and generous than other kids, which is a perfectly rational response to trying to offer what amounts to sugar-coated control. So what I argue in Unconditional Parenting and in another book I wrote called Punished by Rewards, based on hundreds and hundreds of studies, this isn't stuff I thought up in the shower this morning, is that the solution is not to tweak the way we reward, praise, punish, and so on. Not to do it a little bit differently, but to question the whole method of doing too, of carrots and sticks, of bribes and threats. And moreover, not just to rethink the method, but also the goal. Because if you start with the primary goal of parenting is how do I get my kid to do whatever I want, you're inevitably going to fall back on bribes and threats. And that's why in my workshops and talks, I always begin by asking parents, what are your long-term goals for kids? How do you want them to turn out? What would you like them to be like years from now? And when you get people thinking in those terms and people come up with very similar answers, well, I'd like my kid to be happy, ethical, caring, and compassionate, but also self-sufficient and an independent thinker, to be, you know, a lifelong learner, curious, creative. People say stuff like that. And I try then to show them that the research shows that any kind of punishment and any kind of reward gets in the way of your own long-term goals and doesn't even reliably get short-term compliance.
Right.
But it certainly makes it less likely that you're going to get the important stuff.
Now, some people might say, well, listen, our whole world is based on this concept of punishment and rewards, and we don't want our kids to be naive to the fact that, you know, you get paid for when you work, and if you do something wrong, you get a fine, you know, by the police or whatever. Like, they might say, well, it's our job as parents to teach our kids that there is this concept of punishment and rewards in the real world, and we don't want them to be naive about how the real world works. What do you say to that?
First, by real world, you mean one dysfunctional society at one point in history.
Okay.
Second, second, the idea that a lot of bad stuff goes on out there, therefore we should do bad stuff early to our children to get them ready, makes exactly as much sense as saying, yeah, there are a lot of carcinogens in the environment. We better feed as many cancer-causing agents to children.
So they get used to it.
As quickly as possible, right. I call this the Bagouti phenomenon, which is a silly acronym I came up with. It stands for Better Get Used to It, where we take stuff that is demonstrably harmful and say, because it's likely that that harmful stuff will be done later, we will undercut children's lives by immersing them in it. Now, I don't want them to be naive, as you say. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to be blindsided by bad stuff that goes on in dysfunctional workplaces and classrooms and other environments. Therefore, the response is to talk with them about it. First of all, they're not going to be blindsided because we don't raise them in a vacuum. They're going to get more than enough of this garbage without our help for doing more of it to them. Thanks very much. We need to present them with an alternative, not more of the same. But to the extent we want to make sure they process it, think it through, anticipate it, reflect on why this stuff goes on and how when they get to be an adult, they can help change rather than merely help to perpetuate the stuff that doesn't make sense. But what we never need to do is immerse them in it. That's completely different from helping them to reflect on it. You know, we don't teach fire safety by setting children on fire. We teach it by talking them through what you do, you know, if you smell smoke and what have you. One more quick point. In your list of examples of how this stuff often goes on outside the family, you mentioned that people get paid for work, and I want to make it clear that is not what I am objecting to.
Okay.
I do object in the workplace to bonuses, incentive plans, merit pay for performance.
Sure.
But the idea that, you know, in an industrialized economy, you have to earn money to eat. There's no question about that. That's not a reward. That's just compensation. But it does turn out, interestingly enough, that turning compensation into a reward with incentive plans where you dangle more money in front of employees if they jump through hoops turns out to be just as counterproductive as grades in the classroom or rewards that parents use in the home.
Interesting.
Hmm. So talk to us about that very commonly used technique. You already mentioned it, the timeout. Some teachers may even call it the reflection chair, but you've referred to it as forcible confinement. And, you know, many parents swear that it works and that it improves behavior, but what's really happening when we use timeouts?
First of all, the idea that, and many pediatricians and other therapists say to parents, you know, you don't spank your kids, give them a timeout. That's like saying, don't hurt them physically when you can hurt them emotionally. It's really a choice between two different versions of punishment. And if anybody ever says that to you, you should say, obviously, I need to consult somebody who can think beyond any punishment or rewards, can help me work with my child. So timeout originally started by people who worked with B.F. Skinner training rats and pigeons, where instead of just reinforcing their behavior with food, they tried to do a time out from positive reinforcement. That was the original phrase, which usually meant starving them or plunging them into darkness to see if they could make the behavior stop. And so anytime somebody uses time out on a child, they should realize this is the proud history of the concept is making lab animals suffer in order to mindlessly get whatever behavior the experimenter demanded. Now, is it better to give a timeout than to hit a kid? Yes, I guess that's true. Just as hitting a kid is better than shooting him, you know, but that's not much of an argument for hitting him.
Right.
The real question is how we can move away from that. Now, with young children who often in particular don't have a sense of really why this is happening despite adults' explanations, or when mommy is ever going to let me come back. Yeah. This can cause enormous trauma. So even when a behavioral manipulation like this, a punishment like this, can, quote, work temporarily to make a behavior the adult unilaterally has decided is inappropriate to stop, the real question is, what is this doing with respect to the things that really matter long-term, not just short-term, and under the surface in terms of the child's emotional and intellectual and moral development, not just at the surface with the behavior? What is it doing to promote the relationship of trust and care and respect and unconditional acceptance? Well, if you think about it for a minute, you realize that timeout is the opposite of unconditional love and acceptance. From the child's point of view, and that's the only point of view that matters in terms of the child's ultimate well-being, this feels like conditions are being placed in the most heavy-handed, literal way. I am accepted and loved and ultimately lovable only when I do exactly what I'm told. And so even when it works, the cost, psychologically speaking, is significant. And then the flip side of timeout, of course, is praise. Good job, where you get the verbal doggy biscuit for obedience. Here, too, the love has strings attached. I love you. You can be with me only when you blank. And again, that is enormously detrimental, which is not to say that, you know, parents who do these things are being deliberately cruel or stupid. We are immersed in a culture that is all about conditional affection and control. And these are the logical outgrowths of it, but it doesn't mean they make any sense.
No, in fact, I know your book, Unconditional Parenting, I mean, the tagline is a provocative challenge to the conventional wisdom about discipline. This does seem to be the conventional wisdom that's being challenged here, because it seems like we've been doing this for millennia. This notion of fear-based parenting is seems to be really about power imbalance and maintaining this power imbalance to maintain control. To what extent do you think that this is hardwired within us? Like, do you think that we can be untaught almost what seems like it's been evolutionarily sort of built into us?
Oh, it's not evolutionarily built into us at all. All you have to do is pick up a book on cross-cultural anthropology. You can see that many, if not most, of these things don't appear in a whole lot of cultures. This is a function of how we were raised. You know, it's we can't throw up our hands and say, oh, I'd love to make a change, but that's, you know, and then cite biology without any evidence to claim that we have no choice in the matter. Of course we do. And, and even within our culture, you know, there are many parents who have never used rewards and punishments on, on their children. And by the way, when you talk to these people about the outcome, you get enormous, wonderful, heartening response to prove to you, A, that it's not inevitable, you know, and B, that it's not preferable, that the responses are better without it. Now, that's not to say that people who've been raised this way themselves and are in the process of raising their kids with rewards and punishments, with conditional acceptance and so on, can instantly stop. And they may not be persuaded. You know, a lot of people, especially when you get to the point of thinking about, well, how were we raised? It's a lot. It's much. When I find that people react quite negatively to this by saying, oh, that wouldn't work with my kid, or, you know, that sounds nice in theory, but people who say that actually don't even like the theory, I find. Or they say, you know, tell me exactly what I should do. Give me a recipe for when my kid does this. Otherwise, I'm going to dismiss you as unrealistic. These are really people who are clapping their hands to their ears and going, la, 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 la. You know, this is unsettling. It's even terrifying to hear, because it means you have to gulp and ask hard questions about whether maybe, you know, I could have done things differently, or maybe my parents didn't do what I always assumed was in my best interest, which is very deeply unsettling for people. So we have to help folks. That's why I start by asking, what are your long-term goals for your kids? To help them to see that much of what they've been encouraged to do is actually something maybe that they don't want to, because there are long-term effects of this that they haven't thought about. And of course, you have to give people, I don't give recipes. You know, I get lots of emails from people saying, you know, my kid's doing the following, what should I do? And I have to say, I don't know. I've never met your kid or you. I don't know any of the circumstances. It would be irresponsible of me to give you specific advice. All I can do is talk about general kinds of guidelines, principles, ways of thinking about this, and then pay you the compliment of saying, I think you can take it from here and adapt it to the situation that you have with your kids. But let's at least, you know, begin with the understanding that A, punishments and rewards are hardly hardwired into us. They're what our culture has immersed us in. B, they're not necessary because there are many working with strategies available to us, even if they take more patience and talent and time sometimes. Yeah. Because punishments and rewards are so tempting and seductive because they're easy.
Yeah.
You know, any idiot can threaten a kid or bribe a kid, you know, but it takes more time to do this stuff. And then see that punishments and rewards are actively doing some harm, even though that's the last thing we wanted. Once you begin with those understandings, and if you're the sort who wants evidence, you look at the studies, the research showing that this is the case, then folks can say, well, maybe it's time to start thinking about a transition to doing things differently.
Yeah, and I agree it can be hard, because I think you're right that we're conditioned to be conditional. I mean, many, many parents out there, this is what they grew up with, and it must be hard to make a change when that's how you grew up.
Yeah, especially if you get weird looks from other people when you don't punish your kid for acting out, or this is what you're hearing from your mother-in-law, or this is what you see in a syndicated column, you know, or on somebody's blog. It's just, okay, so then you should count to three and then put the kid in the room, or you should use a sticker chart to get the kid to, this is all around us. So it takes some courage to say, you know, this emperor has no clothes. All of this stuff, this is, you know, if your kid is doing something that's really a problem, the idea that, well, I could reward my child for doing it differently, or I could threaten my child for not doing it different. I mean, maybe that makes sense if you're house training a puppy, but not raising a human being.
Yeah, but the attitudes are so ingrained in us. And it seems that a lot of conditional parenting is based on that idea that kids will misbehave if they're given the chance and they think they can get away with it. But that actually runs that opposite to kids will do well if they can. And I think some parents really worry that about the, you know, my kids will try to get away with it, and then won't they take advantage of us, and then won't they walk all over us? What would you say about that fear that I would imagine you hear from parents?
I do, and it's really interesting to see how these practices are, as you imply, and now I will say explicitly, these practices are rooted in a fear that comes from a very dark and cynical view of children, and by extension of our species, that people will get away with as much as they can, that if they're purely self-interested, that we need to kind of cram moral thinking down their throats. Otherwise, they will do the worst. And the happy news is that dark view of children and of human beings is not supported by good evidence. That children from a very young age, while they can do rotten things as they're learning and growing, are also capable of enormous concern for others. And there's a long line of research showing about how even infants are gravely unsettled by the sound of another baby crying more than by equally loud and sudden noises. If something's inborn, in other words, it's a capacity for empathy. and that even very young toddlers will try to reach out with a, you know, maybe a stuffed animal or blanket that comforts them when they see somebody else sad. And that enormous acts of helping, sharing are within the capacity of children who very much want to do well when they can, as you say.
Yeah.
So I understand the fear, and there are other fears that I think hold us back from doing what research and good values show is a preferable way to do things with kids. Mm-hmm. But we need to take those premises, those assumptions about, yeah, well, this is what will happen if kids aren't punished when they do something bad or aren't rewarded when they please us, and really bring them up to the surface and put them under a high intensity light to realize that they reflect prejudices rather than reasonable inferences.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are the long-term mental health effects of teens and adults who grow up in a conditional parenting home? Do you have any research on that? Any evidence for what? And on the yeah. flip side as well, like, what are the benefits that we see in people who have grown up in an unconditional parenting environment?
Right. Yeah. Two different but overlapping questions.
Yeah.
Because you could stop doing rewards and punishments, and that's not the same thing as taking the next step to affirmatively provide the kind of unconditional acceptance that I'm talking about.
Sure.
And there's no, first of all, there are very few longitudinal studies that follow kids for many, many years. There are some, and they are generally in accord with what I've been saying. But we know, for example, that when young adults report having been raised with conditional acceptance, their parents seemed a lot more loving of them, a lot more excited to be with them when they hid their negative emotions, didn't get upset, when they didn't embarrass their parents in front of parents' friends, when they studied hard, made good grades, did well in sports. When any of those things led to the parents responding to them in a fundamentally different way, so they felt like the love was on a tap that could be turned on or off depending on the kid's own behavior. Sometimes, under limited circumstances, the conditional strategies worked in the short run to get the kids to do well in school or sports or pretend they weren't angry when they were or whatever. But the main effects were to, first of all, to jeopardize the relationship between the parent and the child, so the kid grows up somewhat resentful of and wary of the parent, and less likely to want to spend time with a parent when the kid has a choice in the matter. Mm-hmm. And also to feel a sense of being controlled from the inside out. Like, pity the poor kids in high school who are now desperately, compulsively trying to get good grades in school. And of course, the grade is itself a reward or a punishment. Yeah. When mm-hmm. the parent then gets excited about good grades, that's a reward for a reward. You're doubling the damage. You can, but it leads those kids to be kind of to have internalized or swallowed whole those demands, so that after a certain age, the kid doesn't even need the parents standing around threatening or bribing, because the kid is threatening or bribing herself. And if that leads to good grades, the parent actually looks upon that as a success. Mm-hmm. When they've actually raised a workaholic, you know, mm-hmm. someone who mm-hmm. whose success is compulsive and joyless, and that's
right.
That's what happens when you focus too much on the word behavior, which is the stuff that's as I say, just on the surface. Whereas kids who are raised with unconditional love, who know that no matter what they do, their parents will never stop caring about them.
Yeah.
They know it, not just because the parent thinks it's true, but because the parent has acted in a way that the kid has learned that lesson. Those kids become the opposite of narcissists. They become people who know that, who can apologize of mm-hmm. their own free will. They mm-hmm. become people who can say, oh boy, I really screwed this one up. I really fell short of expectations. But I know I'm basically at my core a good person mm-hmm. and capable, and I can get back and try without falling apart. Unconditional support allows, as Carl Rogers told us more than half a century ago, leads to unconditional self-acceptance that in turn allows us to be humble, to recognize our flaws and to work to overcome them and not be on this desperate treadmill of trying to win the approval and love of the parent who made that available to us only contingently. I mean, sadly, there are adults still desperately trying to win the approval of their own parents, even if their parents are dead. You know, that's not what I want for my daughter and son, and that's why never a reward or a punishment. And again, just to close out here the way we started, that does not mean anything goes. It does not mean hands-off, laissez-faire, permissive parenting. It means we reject the two strategies. On the one hand, of top-down punishment and reward-based control, and on the other hand, the doing nothing, you raise yourself, I'm sure you can do it on your own. The third alternative, the one that takes demands more of us but is far more constructive, is that sense of we're going to figure this out together. Not in order to get you to behave the way I want you to now, so much as to help you become a thoughtful person, a happy person.
Yeah, I think that's what we all want for our kids. Maybe I can wrap up with this question, because I think many of our listeners have already started on the journey of parenthood. And so some may feel encouraged now by this conversation, and others may feel bad and wonder if they've missed the boat. What advice would you have for parents who may want to shift after listening to a conversation like this from a conditional parenting approach to an unconditional parenting approach?
Well, first, just the courage to be able to be disoriented or a little upset, unsettled by this, and say, gulp, maybe I have missed the boat in some ways. That speaks very well of parents. The ones I worry about are those who are saying la 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 or coming up with some excuse for dismissing this. Because if you have the courage to be able to say, maybe I can improve, that's a very good sign for the capacity to then think about how to get better at this. If you're lucky enough to have a co-parent, share these ideas with him or her, talk this through, think about what can be done. If your children are old enough, bring them into the conversation.
Right.
I mean, the process of moving from doing to parenting to working with parenting, as I like to call it, should itself be done with children. It's not like if you stop giving rewards and punishments tomorrow, kids are going to leap out of their chairs and say, hooray, now I can be intrinsically motivated. So the question is, how do you do this collaboratively rather than just, yesterday you were doing rewards to kids. Today you're doing the abolition of rewards to kids. Yeah. But to start by engaging them in conversations and giving kids more say, doing more asking than telling. Not only about this transition process, but about everything. Yeah. Because if I've learned one thing about human development, it's that children learn to make good decisions by making decisions, not by following directions. And the kind of decisions they are invited to make will obviously vary depending if they're 2 years old or 12 years old. But that process of just stopping yourself from the telling and doing more asking is important. And I hope that people listening to this will want to hear more about this. I have all kinds of stuff on my website, and of course the book that we mentioned, and there are books by other people as well who use a slightly different language, nevertheless talk about the same basic ideas.
So where can people find out more about your work and the concept of unconditional parenting?
First stop would be my website, which is alfiekohn.org, alfiekohn.org. And there's loads of articles for free, as well as information about a couple of videos, one on education, one on parenting, and then the books we've talked about, including, but not limited to, the one called Unconditional Parenting. And the books, in turn, have long reference sections so people can look up original studies and other sources.
Well, it's certainly compelling, and it certainly is motivating, I think, because we do need to rethink
I mean, just because we've done some things so long for so many years doesn't mean it's right. And there's lots of evidence now that shows that, you know, we may need to take a different approach. And so I really want to thank you for pointing that out to us. And it's been an extremely interesting conversation, Mr. Cohn. And thanks for joining us today.
Oh, I appreciate your interest.
Well, that was a lot of incredible discussion packed into 35 minutes, don't you think? I mean, you got to love Alfie Cohn's points. He makes some good ones and definitely does not mince words. He truly believes kids are inherently good people who develop best in an environment where they are loved unconditionally. And parenting kids unconditionally means not changing their behavior through positive and negative reinforcement, which can make our love, acceptance, and appreciation of them seem conditional, even if we don't intend it to be. I know his work extends beyond parenting into the classroom as well, where he argues for an educational system that isn't based on jumping through hoops and simply passing tests, but rather focuses on creating a safe space for kids to explore and create and learn. But we'll have to save that discussion for another day, perhaps. I find his arguments compelling, and as a pediatrician and father, I want to challenge myself and all of you to think carefully about how we interact with our kids. And could our interactions with them be interpreted as conditional? And if so, how can we shift to a more unconditional approach? I think this is where we tend to get stuck sometimes. If we don't want to toss the quote-unquote verbal doggy biscuit, as Alfie Cohn calls them, then what should we say or do instead? I mean, that's the most common question I get in response to talking to people about the unconditional parenting approach. So here, I want to quote from Alfie Cohn's book, Unconditional Parenting, and recognizing that there's not a cookie-cutter approach to this, give you some ideas. Here's what Alfie Cohn suggests in how to respond to kids. So instead of saying, I like the way you dot, 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 try simply saying nothing and just paying attention. Or instead of saying, good drawing, I love those pictures, try describing rather than evaluating what you see. For example, hey, there's something new on the feet of those people you just drew. They've got toes. Or instead of saying, you're such a great helper, try explaining the effects of the child's action on other people. For example, you set the table. Boy, that makes things a lot easier on me while I'm cooking. And instead of saying, that was a great essay you wrote, try inviting reflection. For example, how did you come up with that way of grabbing the reader's attention right at the beginning? Or instead of saying, good sharing, Michael, try asking rather than judging. For example, what made you decide to give some of your brownie to Deidre when you didn't have to? So there you go, some food for thought and some ideas to think about. Hey, listen, I hope you all have a great week ahead. Thank you for joining us on the Smart Family Podcast today. And if you like this episode, please do share it with a friend. And don't forget to subscribe so that each new episode lands in your feed twice a month. And if you love the Smart Family Podcast, would you leave us a rating? That brings the podcast to the attention of more people to help them with their family relationships as well. And check out our catalog of podcasts so far on our website, smartfamilypodcast.com, or on Apple Podcasts. We've got some great ones there, including recent ones on parenting by Mona Delahook, Sissy Goff, Dr. Stuart Shanker, Dr. Barry Prezant, Jennifer Kalari, all incredible resources for you as you continue on your parenting journey. Look us up on Facebook and Instagram as well. Leave us a comment and join us next time as we bring you information to help you love being home.